Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So notice here that it is Sunday morning, and that would be the third day in the Jewish way of counting since the death and burial of Jesus on Friday. So it's that day early in the morning. In fact, so early it says in the text that it was still dark. And I want you to think about for a moment this morning the fact that although it was early and it was literally still dark, that for Mary, the person whom this story centers on, it was dark in other ways too. It was dark figuratively. This is the darkest moment of Mary's life. Mary Magdalene is a person we just get glimpses of her life in the Gospels. Luke, another gospel writer, he tells us that Mary had 7 demons cast out of her. Now, that's hard for us to get our minds around what that even means, but it means that Jesus had freed her, released her from serious affliction, suffering, pain probably, bondage, the things that dominated and ran her life. Jesus freed her from that. And in response, Mary gives the rest of her life to following Jesus. But then Jesus is gone. He's betrayed by another one of his followers. He's arrested. He's sentenced to death by crucifixion. He's tortured along the way. And finally, he's dead. He's gone. The most important person in the world to her, and he's gone. This is Mary's life's darkest moment. And she has come, it says, early in the morning, probably to get a head start on finishing the burial process. The burial preparation would have been rushed on Friday when Jesus was crucified. Because as sundown approached on Friday, the law said all activity, even burial prep, had to come to an end. And so very likely they were rushed. And Mary now comes to finish the job. In her culture, in her world, a proper burial was everything. And so when it's dark, she comes. And the very first verse says when she gets there, she sees something remarkable. The stone had been removed from the entrance. And that sounds sort of run-of-the-mill to us because we're used to hearing or even singing, as we've done today, about the stone being rolled away. But John gives us some added texture. He shows us the violence, the force that would have been required to remove this massive stone from the tomb entrance. He's really saying it was blasted out of the way. That's what Mary finds. So obviously, something big has happened. You imagine today visiting the graveside of one of your loved ones? Can you imagine maybe going to take some fresh flowers to put on a grave for the season and driving up and walking over to the site and finding it blown apart? Dirt and grass piled everywhere and an empty hole? Can you imagine what that would feel like? That's what Mary was feeling as she approaches the tomb. And her response is, well, I guess it's the response any of us might have had. She just takes off running. Verse 2, so she came running to Simon Peter. You may have heard of Saint Peter. This is him. And the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, that's our author John. That's how he talks about himself in his writings. So she comes to them, and she's out of breath probably. She summons up the ability to gasp, to speak out what she thinks has happened. They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they've put him. The most important person in her life who has been killed, she's at least trying to give the dignity of a proper burial, and now they, probably his enemies, have stolen the body. So Mary's first thought when she sees this stone blasted out of the way, it's not resurrection. It's theft. Well, the next several verses tell the story of these two disciples, Peter and John, themselves running back to the tomb to see what happened. And John, our author, in a third-person way, he relates his own experience of looking into the tomb. It says in verse 5, excuse me, when he got there, he bent over, he looked in at the strips of linen lying there. Those would be the linen strips used to wrap the body for burial. So John looks into the tomb, and what he sees is nothing but linen, no body. And this experience has a profound effect of faith on him, because John himself reports, he saw and he believed. So what he saw when he looked into the tomb, it caused him to believe. Mary, however, she had a harder time with this. We pick her story up in verse 11. Peter and John, they've gone back home. They haven't apparently talked to Mary. Notice what it says in verse 11. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. It's a remarkable thing that's happened, right? Mary, weeping and wailing outside the tomb, she decides to look in just like John did. But what she sees is different than what John saw. She doesn't just see laundry on the floor, she sees two angels, resplendent, blazing in white. It's an amazing thing. And if that's not enough to get her heart pumping, the angels speak to her. And they say, "Woman, why are you crying? Indeed, why are you crying? Obviously, something amazing has happened here." Let's look at the impact that this encounter with angels had on Mary. She says, "They've taken my Lord away, and I don't know where they've put him." Think with a minute about Mary, right? Mary has come and seen this stone blown out of the way of the tomb. She's seen the tomb empty. She's now encountered two angels who speak to her. And yet she still cannot believe what we call the Easter story. She's still on her original conclusion. Someone has stolen the body, and I want to get it back. Why do you suppose it's so hard for Mary to experience and to believe the Easter story? Even after seeing the tomb and the stone and the angels, what makes it hard for her to believe? I think it's because what she's presented with is really hard to believe, because it's dark. It's her darkest, most despairing moment. Jesus is gone, and nothing's going to shake that reality from her. And you know what? I kind of like this. You know, I can relate to this, because sometimes this stuff is hard to believe. The only reason the resurrection story of Jesus is hard to believe, frankly, is because it's impossible. It's impossible. Christianity asks us to believe something that for us is impossible, beyond our experience, beyond our knowledge, beyond our understanding. And it's even harder when it's dark, when your life is hard, when what you actually face in life is the opposite of resurrection, right? Everything seems headed for decay. My body reminds me of that every day. I watch people's relationships decay. Sometimes you look at your future and what do you see? A downward trajectory. Thursday morning when I went to go out to work, I just walked out the door and the first thing I saw was an ambulance and a fire truck parked across the street at my neighbor's house. Two guys in a stretcher on their way in. And then there's the matter of death. I don't know about you, but lately I've seen a lot more people dying than rising. So I get Mary. I understand her position. Because in the darkest moments of our lives, we can find it hard to believe. But the good news about the Easter story, the good news about Easter is that it's not about me. It's not about how much I can understand and what I can fathom. It's about Jesus. And Jesus takes over this story. Jesus, we're going to see, take the initiative and insert himself into the story, and everything shifts. Look what happens next. Verse 14. At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there. Can you imagine that? Jesus decides to show himself to Mary. He's standing right there. And look at her response. But she did not realize that it was Jesus. Can you imagine that? He's standing right there. But she can't see it. She doesn't realize that it's him. So he speaks to her. Maybe that'll do it. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you have put him. I'll get him." Wow. Jesus is standing right there. Then he talks to her. And she's still at her original conclusion. Someone's stolen the body. If it's been you, I'll go get him. Just tell me, help me. Why doesn't she recognize him? Well, it's possible that he has in some way changed his appearance. You know, there's other stories of Jesus appearing to people after his resurrection and they don't quite recognize him. Or it could be she's just extremely distressed. Right? She's deep in her grief. She's wailing. She just doesn't see it. It might just be that it was the logical thing. You're in the garden and someone shows up and so it's the gardener. Right? Remember, Mary's not looking for a risen Jesus. She's looking for a corpse. She doesn't expect to see a risen Jesus. And so she didn't. So what will it take for Mary to realize that even in her darkest moment, Jesus is right there with her? One thing. Jesus said to her, "Mary." And she turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. One thing, her name. All it takes to cut through her blindness, her despair, her inability to recognize is the sound of his voice speaking her name. And the moment he speaks it, she sees what was right there all along. It's when Jesus calls her name. She hears that, and then she sees. And then she turns. Did you notice that? It says she turned toward him. And that's not talking just about her body turning. Indeed, two verses earlier it said she turned around towards Jesus. This is a word that talks about something inside of her also turning toward Jesus when she heard his name, her name on his lips. And this illustrates what Jesus had talked about when he called himself the Good Shepherd. And said, "My relationship with my people is like a good shepherd with his sheep, and they know each other." and they know their names. Back in the 10th chapter of this book, John records Jesus saying this, "I am the good shepherd." And talking about the good shepherd, he says, he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. His sheep follow him because they know his voice. Mary hears him because he's not a gardener. He's a shepherd, and he knows her name. And there's a depth of relationship and intimacy that's implied by that that gets right to the heart of Mary. He knows her by name because he's her shepherd, and he cares deeply for her. And I want you to be encouraged by this today, that Jesus called to her not because she believed, but because she was his. Because she belonged to him. Not because she had it all figured out, but because they were on a first-name basis. And it can be the same way for us. Jesus offers the very same thing to us. Jesus wants you to know that in your life's darkest moments, he's right there, and you can turn to him. He knows your name. Jesus wants to be your shepherd. He wants to guide you. He wants to protect you. He wants to lead you to the greenest pastures. He offers you the same relationship that he had with Mary. In that same chapter, Jesus said, "I'm the good shepherd, and I know my sheep. My sheep know me, and I give them eternal life. They shall never perish." And this picture of ancient shepherds, multiple shepherds storing their flocks together in the same sheep pen overnight. And each day the shepherds would go out in the morning, and one would stand over here, and one would stand over here, and one would stand over here, and they would call the sheep by name, and the sheep would know which shepherd to go to. Jesus says that's how it can be with you. That even in your life's darkest moment, you can know, I'm standing there. When it's hard for you to believe, I'm right there. And if you will turn to me, when you turn to me, you'll hear your name. Because in our darkest moments, Jesus really is right there calling us. So Mary, as you can imagine, when she has this powerful exchange with Jesus, he says her name. She calls him teacher. She does exactly what you think she would do. She grabs a hold of him. I mean, she's lost him once. She's not going to do it again. And look what Jesus has to say to her. This is verse 17. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me. Don't hold on. I've not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and to your God." He just has to pry her gently off of him and say, "I'm not going anywhere right now, but I'm headed to the Father, so go tell the others." And this great story, this story of Mary seeing the stone and the tomb and the angels and even Jesus himself at first and not being able to believe it, this story culminates in this final statement by Mary. It says that Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. When Mary turns to Jesus, when she hears him call her name, she gets this experience of the risen, resurrected Jesus. She's the first one to see him. And it comes in her moment of turning. And we can have that same experience. If you'll turn toward him, if you'll turn your life in his direction, if you will tune your ear to hear your name on his lips, you can experience the reality of resurrection, the joy of Easter. Mary saw him physically. You'll see him in the unmistakable fingerprints of his presence in your life and in your circumstances. You'll see him in the settled confidence of his reality that so many of his followers have had from that time until now. You'll see him that way. When we turn toward Jesus, we too experience the joy of resurrection. When we realize in our darkest moments, when it's hardest to believe, Jesus is right there with us. And if we'll turn, we'll experience the joy of resurrection. I want you to know how encouraged I am by the fact that Jesus picked Mary, one who found it so hard to believe, to be the first one to see him. That does my heart good. He wants the same for you. Turn to him. And you'll find what Mary found. The hope of Easter. He is risen. Meaning he's no longer dead. Which means he has overcome. He's overcome death. And so when he says to his followers, "Take heart, I have overcome the world," he means it. And you'll find that he is for you. That the whole meaning and purpose of this thing we call Easter is really you. And that he can rescue you from your pain. He can free you from your guilt, even from your sin. Because his death on the cross, God accepts in place of our own payment for sin. And just like Mary, you can have the profound experience of him rescuing you and releasing you. So turn to Jesus. Even when it's hard to believe, he's right there. And if you'll listen, you'll hear him call your name. And when you do, you'll experience the joy of resurrection.